Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. Rebecca, are you on the line?
I am. I was just about to say that same thing.
Okay. I wasn't sure if there was an unclarity about that. It was a very just sitting and breathing moment, and I figured I would just find out.
Yeah, I just got unmuted myself, so good.
Oh, good, good. Okay. I think I got unmuted quite a bit before you did, so there we go.
So this is Rebecca, and I'm happy to be joined by Jen.
Surprise.
We're here this afternoon to talk about the recent working meditation retreat that happened at the monastery. Yeah?
Yeah.
So how would you like to launch us, Jen, and tell us a little bit about this fabulous experience that I think a dozen of us or so had this weekend?
Yeah, I was just looking at the clock, and I'm sure you're thinking the same thing. How to fit this in 10 minutes? But truly, I mean, I was just looking at how it's so Zen is a practice of direct experience, and so everything we do, anyone who's been on retreat with us knows that the entire retreat is structured to have a direct experience of practice.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, it's funny because when I first started doing retreats, I was having that experience, but I didn't really ever stop to think about it. And now that I've been practicing for some time and I have the privilege of facilitating and that sort of thing, I know how much things are very consciously created that way and why. And so I was just looking at the way this retreat happened is very spontaneously. So the guide was down here, Sherry was down here, and, you know, we've had a beautiful spring and a lot more rain than we're used to having in the last few years anyway. And so things grew like crazy. And so the folks who live here, the residents, were not able to keep up with it. We didn't keep up with it. And so it dropped in for Sherry that what an opportunity to invite whoever's available and wants to in the Sangha to come and participate with us for these several days, just fitting it perfectly right between two retreats and inviting folks to come and participate with us and to just do what we could do on the monastery property. And I'll tell you, there was so much teaching and modeling and direct experience that happened in those few days for me, and I would imagine for all of us who got to participate, that I was so struck by what a unique opportunity it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when you talk about, when you say that, go ahead.
Go ahead, when I say that,
Yeah, when you say that about direct experience and it being so Zen and link that to work, to the working meditation, how would you, would you say more about how that is, how that is our practice, what we really got to, how we really got to practice with that in the context of work and really working with on the property?
So one of the things for me, and I think, again, practice is so fantastic this way, is that whatever we need to see as an individual is what we see. And whatever we need to bump up against is what we bump up against. So even though we're all at the same retreat doing the same things, in some ways you could say, imagine we're each having our own unique retreat because we're seeing what we need to see. So for example, a karma that follows me around is one that says, all right, okay, so we have a lot to do here. So let's sit down and let's plan it out. And let's assign this and put the detail. That's going to work. No, that's not going to work. No, you mean you can picture it, right? As far as I can tell, that's not the way life puts things together, and it doesn't seem to be the way that the guy puts things together. Mm-hmm. And it is such an pleasure, honor, and there's one more word that I'm looking for that's not coming to me. Yeah, delight, that's a great word. To watch how life in specific, in this case, through Sherry, orchestrates that, where you can just watch how there is what is, and, you know, what we're hoping to accomplish. And then there are the people who show up to do it, and there are these tools that we have, and there is the, you know, and then all the factors just come together, and it is extraordinary the amount of things that got done on this property in those essentially really 3 days of work.
Yeah. So just to give folks a sense of how that was, and to reflect a little of the process that you laid out. So what conditioning would have us do is this kind of linear process of planning and laying it all out and all that. And what was modeled for us was much more, I don't know, spontaneous or in the moment. And so there were these multiple projects. One was like the courtyard and the like a major weeding process that happened around the courtyard and weed eating all over the property. And then there was the pond and the cleaning out the pond and that whole big endeavor. And then there was the kitchen, the cooking and the feeding of everybody and all of the other kind of just maintaining the flow of the retreat that happened. And so these three big areas going on and in the group discussions that we would have, almost everybody commented on how much actually got done in this relatively short amount of time with everybody, you know, we can just, as you said, seeing what they're seeing, doing what's right there in front of them to do, and, you know, and taking really exquisite care, I project, of themselves and the task at hand in the whole process.
Yes, exactly. The other things that we kept hearing from people over and over, and it was certainly my experience, was so there's an idea in conditioned mind of how what I'm going to be able to do, and then there's what's actually so. And that place of, you know, I think one of the things that's so life-changing in a situation like that is to realize how much we're doing that. So, you know, someone, life in whatever form, offers us an opportunity. And the habit is then to look the conditioned mind without, of course, realizing we're doing that, but to see, is that going to work? And, you know, the answer is always in some form going to come back, no, probably not. I mean, it could, but no, it probably won't work. You probably won't be able to do that. You're this, you know, whatever it is. And so many folks were talking about that sense of, that's not true. And it's that amazing opportunity to learn the skill of directing attention away from that conversation to what's actually happening in this moment, in this moment, in this moment, in this moment. And what that affords us is the opportunity to, if we do need to care for the body in some way, maybe shift position or ask for a different task or whatever, then it's meant to do that, right? There's nothing going about that. But otherwise, we can just keep enjoying the task, you know, being outside in this beautiful place with amazing people accomplishing, you know, fantastic things.
Yeah, that is such a good point. And doing the task for the task, you know, so somebody was talking about as they're rinsing the rocks that line the bottom of the pond, just really loving each rock. Okay, here, now you get all cleaned up, and now you get to go back to work at the bottom of the pond, you know, and just loving each rock as it got put back in place, and loving each, you know, each plant that we are clearing away and giving room to grow, and all of those things for the task itself, not for just some, which kind of goes back to the karma that you started us out talking with that I think all of us can relate to, which is, no, we've got to get something done. We've got to accomplish something. And that, you know, and instead it was just for that moment, for that very thing, for the love of the rock, for the love of the court.
Exactly. And, you know, as you say that, I was standing in the courtyard today looking at that courtyard, and it's beautiful. It is beautiful. We actually ended a retreat the morning of the day that this all started. So we had the Nothing Wrong With You retreat, and I hope they're all listening. Hello. Hope they're doing well. And off they went, and I thought on Saturday, I think we've even talked about it in group, I wish those folks could see the monastery right now, because they wouldn't believe what happened in the 3 days after they left. Yeah. I mean, the place was just absolutely transformed. And absolutely. I will say also, what's very fun is that just today, so we were in that pond and, you know, we cleaned it out, like you said, and the water was quite murky afterwards. You know, it looked, oh my gosh, it looks dirty. And it was just today, 3 days later, that it's all settled, and you can now see the rocks at the bottom of the pond.
Mm-hmm.
And that was I thought that was a beautiful metaphor.
Oh, that is a beautiful metaphor. And I see that we're up against the clock, but I can't resist the opportunity to say to those "There is nothing wrong with you" participants who left the morning before all of this transformation happened, and everyone else who hasn't been back to the monastery in a while, is this a great time to come and see it, and the invitation to come see the transformation for yourself and just enjoy the beauty. It's always beautiful, of course, but it's just extraordinarily beautiful at this time.
And
thank you to everybody who pitched in.
Exactly. Thank you. That's exactly what I was going to say. Just a huge thank you to everyone who showed up, you know, all the residents, all the folks who came from, you know, put aside their lives for these several days and came and joined us, and especially for the main leadership of the guide of the practice, and just, again, having that modeled, being right out there with the weed eater, you know, right out there with the shovels, right out there, right next to us, you know, sweating and moving. And such, for me, such an inspiring model of, you know, day in and day out, we care for the body, we care for the spirit, we care for the mind. And then what an amazing gift to when it's time to do something like this, which does call us to another level of, you know, physicality and other sorts of things, that we're able to rise to that challenge. And what a gift that is to the monastery, to the practice, and especially to ourselves. So,
that's so true. So well said. Thank you.
Thank you.
Wow. Thank you for leading us in this conversation. It's fun to just relive it again and see. And
just,
you know, can't wait to go see I didn't notice the rocks. I'll have to go watch the rocks now through the water.
Yeah, exactly. And, it's amazing.
So thank you, Jen. Is there anything else before we turn it back over to Michael and Sharon?
Oh, I'm sure there's 100 other things, but, you know, on we go to practice in another way for the next hour, right?
Well, thank you. And I'll just add my thanks to everyone, too, and the guide for the modeling. It was a beautiful experience. So.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you for being with us. Yeah. So, Michael, we'll turn it over to you and Sherry now.
Wonderful. Thank you, Rebecca, and thank you, Jen. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael.
How are you?
Excellent. And yourself?
Great. I'm great. I'm great. After a practice weekend, it's wonderful.
Uh-huh. You got to see the whole deal, didn't you?
Yes. Yes. It was great to be at the monastery. Yeah. A great privilege.
Yeah. Yeah, so a couple of things about that. One, Rebecca and Jen were not quite accurate. So I want to give the real deal. So they were there doing a There's Nothing Wrong With You retreat, which is arduous. Okay, it's a lot, because that whole place and everybody there just throws themselves wholeheartedly into providing the very best experience they can for those folks who are coming for that retreat. And so they're really working. And I come in with this brilliant idea of doing this. I came up with the idea, and then the time that I selected for it was really worse than this one. But they say that the retreat was over in the morning. It was not over in the morning. They served those people lunch, and got them, you know, waved them off. And the other people were coming in as they were waving goodbye to that one group of retreatants. Here comes another group of people in, right? So it's just get all the dishes done and the kitchen cleaned up and then start cooking for the next group of people who are going to be there. So it was, I just didn't want people to have the idea that they had those extra 3 or 4 hours to kind of loll about on the porch. They didn't. So it was a really impressive effort on everybody's part. So that's one part, one thing about it. And the second thing about it is what we decided as a group. We had so much fun. And it's such a great way to be together. It's different from anything else that we do. For those of us who've been around for a long time, it really took us back to building that place. The very first days of what it was like to be there. And then, you know, throughout time, different big projects where people would come and do that sort of makeover activity. And so what we decided we want to do is do this once a quarter. So it's a tremendous support for the people who live there, because it is, it's 320 acres, for heaven's sake. You know, that's like having your own park, your own, you know, state park or city park or something. Yeah. It's a lot for a small group of people to try to keep up with. So if we come in once a quarter, and those of us who, even, you know, we'll announce it more than 24 hours ahead of time next time. And, you know, people might even want to come in from a distance and participate in that way. And so we can not let things get so kind of far behind that we're doing 4 or 5 major projects at the same time. Spread it out a little bit. So we're people like to do that sort of thing, like to participate in working meditation. And again, people who have been around practice for a while remember with great fondness our work retreats that we did, you know, in North Carolina and Pennsylvania and certainly down at Carmel for years and years and years, and then up here at the monastery as well. It's a very special way to practice. So we'll let folks know ahead of time, put it on the calendar and join us. I thought years ago, before we had the building, we did a sesshin at Thanksgiving, and we did it in what's now called the Meditation Hut. And it just poured rain. It poured. And we just spent the whole time pretty much, you know, thinking we were going to drown. And we did T-shirts afterwards. I survived the Thanksgiving sesshin. And I thought after this one, it would have been really fun if we'd had T-shirts, you know, that people could have as a memento of the great effort. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
Very fun.
Wow.
Yes, memorable events.
Yes. Yes. And it's true. I love that Sangha energy of everybody working together on a big project. It's great. It's great. You just feel pulled along by the whole thing.
Yeah. In fact, one of the memories that we went over was, I don't know what year it was, that we did that day of meditation and prayer at Herb's Pavilion in San Francisco.
For peace.
And where we transformed that giant, giant building, the airplane hangar, just put it, brought in trees. I had actually forgotten about it. We brought in actual live, full-grown trees into that place and set it all up. Then the next day we took it all down. So fun.
Yeah,
it's just so fun. There's nothing like it.
Something like that. Yes, yes. Lovely. Yeah. Lovely.
Mm-hmm.
Great. And I have some announcements here.
Oh, goody.
Reflective Listening Buddies is a powerful support for conscious, compassionate awareness. requiring participants to show up weekly to practice being present. And a new quarter begins July 15th.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and there are a few spaces left in the foundational There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreat, June 30th through July 7th in North Carolina. This retreat offers an opportunity to do the compassionate and courageous work of freeing oneself from the ravages of conditioning and self-hate, and is perfect for beginners and experienced practitioners alike.
Yes. If somebody hasn't done it for a while, it's a great thing to do.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And for these and all other opportunities, visit schedule.livingcompassion.org. And a reminder that we are on Bamboozle number 6, Comparison, the assignment for week 1.
Mm-hmm.
Comparison. Brutal, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. If we had which is the worst bamboozle? Can you imagine trying to figure that out? It would be one of those, the worst bamboozle is the one that I'm caught in currently, right?
Exactly. And if you'd like to talk with Sherry today, you can express that desire by making Gas Show, by pressing *6 and then 1. And a focus on one topic in about 5 minutes is always ever so helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, here we go, Sherry.
All right, thank you.
Sure. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, this is Jen in Pennsylvania.
Hello, Jen, how are you?
I'm very well.
Good. What's going on?
Well, yeah, I wanted to call because I haven't called in a long time, and I listen always. I listen to all the shows still, and actually I haven't, it's funny that I'm noticing, even though I haven't called in a while, I still get the heart pounding. I'll just report that still happens. My heart is still pounding.
Well, I'm glad you're calling because I'll tell you, while your heart rate slows down, it has occurred to me, I love the fact that so many new people call in. Sometimes we'll have a show where everybody who calls in is a first-time caller, which is very, very fun. But I'm also really aware that there are a lot of old-timers who don't call in any longer. And then that's not as much fun because we miss you when you don't call in. So glad you're calling.
Well, that's exactly what I got you. So I have been I'm participating a lot in practice, and one of the main things that I'm participating in is what we were calling the year-long money retreat for a while. And I guess at this point, for me, it's kind of for the rest of my life, transformation retreat, really. It's been an absolutely amazing experience, and so I get to participate a lot through that. It's a really fantastic opportunity, and at the same time, I listen every single week to Open Air, and when I would hear people calling in and you and Michael often saying that, oh, it's so nice to hear from so-and-so, I always feel that, like, oh, it's so great to know so-and-so's still out there practicing, and I thought, at one point, it kind of hit me like, oh, I'm one of those people. Maybe somebody is wondering, is that Jen from Pennsylvania still around,
Yeah, whatever happened to her?
Right. Maybe someone was, wondering if that Jen from Pennsylvania fell off the whatever. So I'm still here and very much practicing, just in kind of a different, participating a lot through this other venue right now. And so I just wanted to call in and participate and just say that I am here and just how grateful I am that Open Air just continues to be such a huge gift. There are just so many times when it's what I need to turn the attention. The attention will be someplace not helpful, and I can go to the archives or I can listen live or whatever it is, and it just it changes everything. I can't listen to this and not, you know, go to a different place and direct the attention to a different place. I'm just really grateful. It's just wonderful.
Mm. Thank you, and thank you for saying that. And thank you for mentioning that other retreat. As you know, that retreat that I don't talk about that much. I've offered it to many people, almost all of whom have turned me down. It is, as you know, probably the most powerful practice support, transformational support, anything that we've ever done. Now, the tool that I vote for, of course, you know, meditation. Yes, absolutely. No question about it. That'll always be number one. But recording and listening, the most powerful tool. And this particular retreat that you're talking about, the most transformative, the most terrifying, threatening, resistance-producing, no, I'm not going to do that. I would rather live the rest of my life in hell than face that retreat that I've ever encountered. I just wrote to somebody about it, and I said it is definitely the most outrageous project that I've ever been involved in. If that piques anyone's interest, it is only for those who are really committed to waking up and ending suffering. Would you agree with me?
Oh, I would say a big hallelujah. Yes, I would say I would so agree. Yeah, and I would definitely put out that plug. I mean, for sure, you know, conditioning wildly resisted, and, you know, yeah, it just, you know, if conditioning kind of says, well, maybe some people can do that, but I can't do it or whatever, it wasn't like an easy fit for conditioning, for sure. The resistance was bigger than anything I've ever seen, and the transformation, like you said, has been bigger than anything I've ever experienced. It's so amazing. The support is incredible, and the opportunity, just what you said, to go up against all of the, just these places that conditioning can be hidden otherwise, you know? I mean, I definitely was a person who I consider myself to have a pretty dedicated practice and go to retreats and participate in a lot of different ways, but still there was a way that in my day-to-day life, conditioning could do, could really run the show a lot, and it still tries, but this retreat has highlighted that so much. I feel like it's this almost like this cleansing process or something. It's like shining into every corner, like all those places where conditioning has a hold here and a hold here, and kind of like working all of those free. And to me, the great joy of it is the support is like nothing I've ever received. I mean, the support is so good. I don't, you know, without it, it would be rugged, but with the support, it's actually, you know, very joyful. It is challenging and big and everything else, but it's incredibly deeply supported, and that just makes it so worth it. So if anybody's out there and conditioning is screaming and kicking and all that, if they've heard about it or if they haven't heard about it yet, I would just encourage you to go see if you can support yourself past that resistance, because something really, really, really good is on the other side, and there's a lot of support for it.
Yeah, well, thank you, Jen. I really appreciate that. I don't talk about it in too many places, just because people just freak out.
Yeah,
and you know, I hate to do that to people. Really, I mean, people suspect that I enjoy it, but I actually don't. If people are to the place where they think, yeah, I think I'm ready. What happens, of course, when I mention it to anybody is they're you know, a retreat that goes beyond fear, resistance, and limitations. Wow, yeah, I want to do that. And then they find out what we're doing, and they go, no, I don't want to do that. That's the point. That's the point. That reaction is why we're doing it. Yeah, but I don't that's not for me. I don't want to do that. So yeah, it's a graduate course, and so thank you for mentioning it, and speaking of it in that enthusiastic way, because it's true. It's like nothing else, and And there are probably people out there who say, yeah, I'm actually ready. I'm ready to stop suffering. I'm ready not to have practice be something that I do once in a while when conditioning says it's okay for me to do it. But I want to face this moment by moment every day of my life. And so we got just a thing for them, don't we?
We sure do. Yes.
All
yeah,
right.
And thank you.
Thank you,
Jim, for offering it and all the support. Yeah, thanks. It's really fun to get to call in again. So I'll call in again.
Yeah.
I'm out here practicing.
You can do it again.
Yes. All right. Thank you. Have a great show.
Take care. Thanks, Jen. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Jen. That was a very enthusiastic testimonial there, Sherry.
Oh, yeah. Well, I could tell stories about her that would be the reason for that, but we don't do that, so I'm not going to. But, yes, she has good reason for all of that enthusiasm. Yeah.
And if people are interested, should they email the guest master?
Yes.
To follow up?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you, Michael. Thank you for that.
Sure. Sure. And we have another caller here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. And would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. This is Ellie in San Diego.
Well, hello, Ellie. How are you?
Having a really rough time.
What's going on?
And the recent events in the country have just brought up a lot of emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And and so much fear and anger and just overwhelming levels of reaction. And I haven't, like, I've basically been just using my tools as much as I can.
Mm-hmm.
Just really challenging.
Mm-hmm. And can you say a little about that? I mean, so it brings up fear and anger. And what happens with that? I'll tell you, we were in a conversation, the retreat that Jen just mentioned, we were in a conversation earlier today, people were talking about, what they were looking at was the difference between what is an emotion and what is a story.
Oh.
So what am I feeling, and how and when does that trip over into stories? And I'm wondering if that's part of what you're looking at with this.
Yeah, I think that points the direction I probably want to go. Where I am right now is probably a lot in the story. It's like, it's when I read about the things that happened and I feel there's a lot of sadness and, like I said, fear and anger.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Well, and there's part of me that's like, well, just, you know, don't read about it.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want to disconnect from the world.
Okay. Yes, I know a lot of people feel that way. But let me ask you this. Is that the world? I can't remember who it is, somebody that we would know. I think it might be the Baskin-Robbins chap or the Smith and Hawkins chap or one of those folks who did a book on just not, you couldn't do a book on all of the good things that regular people are doing around the world, but as many of them as he could find, to just attempt to point us in the direction of the media is focused on everything that's wrong, everything that isn't working, everything that's sad and cruel and hateful and that will stir people up into fear and anger and that sort of thing. And then on any given day, there are thousands, hundreds of thousands of people doing good, kind, loving, generous acts.
Yeah, so, like, I'm not reading the things that are about going towards anger. It's just lots of people making music and trying to make sense out of tragedy.
Right. Which we cannot do, can we? I mean, there's no way to make sense out of something like that unless we, to me, if we go the route of, well, if I look inside at something and I feel anger, I feel fear and anger, and I could see how I would want to, if I stayed in that place and I fed that, I would want to strike out, lash out against people who I would consider to be dangerous or vicious or violent or whatever it is. So if we really want to make sense out of it, it's not that hard to do. But that's not a sense that actually makes sense. It's just, yes, we can all get to those places in ourselves where we could picture having the kinds of feelings, perhaps we know that we have the kinds of feelings, that would inspire somebody to do something so awful. When I became a mother, I was extremely young, way too young to be a mother, actually, and not terribly stable mentally, and with a child who was very colicky, probably partially the result of having an unstable mother, and just cried around the clock, just screamed around the clock. And there I was, with no help, no support, and so I would carry her and I would rock her until I couldn't walk anymore. I was so exhausted, and then I would sit down because I knew I was going to fall asleep and I was afraid I would drop her. And then she's still screaming, and I would put her down, and I would walk into the kitchen, and I would open all the cupboards. And the bottom cupboards I would kick shut, and the top cupboards I would slam shut. And I would scream at the top of my lungs, and then I would go back in, and I would pick her up, and I would start to rock her again. And as crazy as I was during that time in my life, I could see how people would do things to children. Because I was aware that if that screw in my head were just undone one more turn, I would be that person. And from that time, I've never had any judgments about anybody who did anything that to me seemed like something I wouldn't do, because I know how people get there. And I'm just grateful that I never did anything in one of those states that would produce the kind of effects, results that happens to some people. Because if we're honest, I think we all know how it happens.
I think the biggest piece of it is the fear of that it could have been me, that it could have been me that was a victim.
Yes. Yes, and absolutely.
That being who I am as a female, as a lesbian, that people hate me for who I am. And that hurts.
Yes. Well, you know, people hate people for all kinds of reasons, right? It's like when people talk to me about Catholic guilt or Jewish guilt or, you know, whatever the thing is, you know, that and my response always is, guilt is. You know, guilt is. People feel guilt because they feel guilt. Let's not blame it on a religion or a culture or something like that. Let's just take responsibility for it. So in the same way, people just hate people. Yeah? So you could say, you know, people would hate you because of that. Well, there are people who would love you because of that. Right? There are people who would want to protect you because of that.
Yeah.
So are we afraid? Yeah, if we're afraid. We're afraid if we're afraid. But to me, our opportunity is to look at these things that go on inside of us and make peace with them, not wish that the world were different so that we wouldn't be having the experience that we're having.
And when things just feel really overwhelming, to check in with the mentor?
I would encourage living with the mentor so that things don't become overwhelming.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think I just said this to somebody in the email class, that thing about when you're drowning, it's your very best opportunity to learn to swim, okay, which is no doubt true. But it's just intelligent not to wait.
Yeah.
So we know that there's violence in the world. We know that there's craziness, right? We know, it's always been that way. For people like us, we are the most privileged, protected people who have ever lived on the planet, right? And it's still crazy. The Buddha said 2,500 years ago, society is insane. Okay? Conditioned people do crazy stuff, hoping that it's going to be different or wishing that it were different. To me, doesn't seem helpful. But making peace with that, being all right with that in the sense that we know that and we are at a place in our lives where what happens is not devastating. So Zen has long been called the religion of death, because that's That's the deal. Can you live each moment as if it's your last? Yeah. As joyfully, wholeheartedly, as if it's your last, and with the same level of letting go as if it's your last. That's our opportunity. That's available to us. Because I see no evidence that society is ever going to be any different. So on the call this morning, when we were talking about this, one of the things that we talked about was to take that emotion that we feel. So we, you know, something so sad happens. There's just so much sadness, so much pain involved. Can we take that emotion and come up with something that we can do that will add love to the mix, that will add compassion?
I've been making music.
Say it again.
I've been making music.
Making music?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. To offer something that comes from kindness and love and care and compassion. Let's put that in the mix. Let's all add that. Because otherwise, then all we're adding is more of the same, more pain, more anger, more hurt, more fear. We don't want to do that.
Yeah. Thank you.
You are very welcome. Take good care of you, okay?
I will. Thank you, Sherry. Thank you, Michael.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Ellie. That was a very powerful conversation for me, Sherry.
For me too, Michael.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes. Sherry, we're going to break now to hear from our coaching program, and then we'll be back to talk to more callers.
All right. Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome.
The practice theme for this year is Anjali, emptying your teacup. As the Zen story teaches, when we're full of ego's preferences, opinions, likes, and dislikes, there is no room for the guidance and clarity of awareness. Through weekly coaching, regular commitments, and the practice of recording and listening, we train to empty our teacup and be open to life. Zen awareness coaches are trained by Sherry Huber to offer individual coaching about life issues and awareness practice in general. We hear from new folks and old-timers alike that awareness coaching provides the support they need to deepen their practice. And since coaches donate a percentage of their fees, getting a coach assists in supporting practice. To request a Zen Awareness Coach, go to livingcompassion.org, click on the pink lotus, then Programs to find Zen Awareness Coaches. Make 2016 the year of emptying your teacup and having the life your heart desires.
Welcome back to Open Air. And Sherry, we have another caller here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry and Michael. This is Rita.
Hi, Rita. Hi. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. Yeah, I really got a lot out of that last conversation as well. I, too, had a difficult time with my child and, you know, had to sit her down and walk away a couple of times and get some support. Because I was having some pretty harsh reactions. So, and really nothing to do with her. It was all me.
Oh, right. Absolutely.
how close it could get, you know. So I really have empathy for that little, you know, the screw's a little looser, you know, anything could happen. So,
yeah.
Okay, so I wanted to talk about a couple of things real quickly. The first is, and I'm still kind of caught in this. I know that you and I have talked about this a little bit, and I've talked about it before. I had an incident where, an experience, I guess it is, that I was listening to Open Air and got, you know, really some great insight about being unconditional love and letting life lead. And I had the fleeting thought, I was on my way to a mountain hike, and I had the fleeting thought of meeting, you know, wouldn't it be nice to meet a man who lives in this town, and you know, he would live here, and I would live over there, and we could, you know, visit each other, and it would be so fun. And it was just a fleeting thought, and by a coincidence, I ended up on a different hike than I had planned, and this man came up with a guitar and started playing, and we just sort of hit it off, and we started dating. And he was away for a while, and I asked him about a day that we had spent together over the phone. I asked him and how he liked it, and he didn't particularly appreciate my question. And he flipped out, and since that point, it just sort of went downhill and just kept having these little negative responses that did some damage, and the relationship ended abruptly. And my question about that is, you know, I was letting life lead and taking the direction, and I had the thought, and the man shows up, and then it turns out sort of painfully. And, you know, it's been a month or so, and I'm still sort of like wondering, what the heck? You know, can I trust life? Is that life leading?
Oh,
or?
Well, okay. So, yes, there we are, huh? So we like to trust life to lead us when it produces the man, right? Or if, you know, if or the woman, or you know, if or the job or the house or the whatever it is, you know, it just all falls into place and all this good stuff happens, and I just I just love letting life lead, right?
Yeah.
And then I get a life experience that shows me stuff that I don't want to see. This is not what I want. I'm not having a good time. So can I trust life if life then shows me stuff that I don't want to see?
So it's not what we want, it's what we need.
Yeah, it depends on what we're going for. So if we're looking for life only to give us what we want, then I think we can trust life not to come through for us in that way. But if what we want from life is to wake up and in suffering, then what we can know is, yeah, we're gonna get that. We're gonna get some things that we just love. We're gonna get some things that we just hate. But we're gonna get a lot of awareness.
Okay, so what I learned from that is to see how much conditioning was in charge and how I was coming from it. So without being aware of it, and also seeing sort of self-hate reflected back at me.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, it could one possibility with this is you were really lucky. You were really lucky that you saw how the relationship could go before you spent a lot more time investing yourself in it, right?
Yeah.
Because if you say something and the other person is set off to the point that they respond in what, unpleasant or hateful ways, or they don't want to talk to you anymore, they don't want to see you. Well, that's really good to know, right? Because hopefully you are attempting to be in a relationship open to how somebody is, communicative and exploring what goes on with the other person, and you'd like somebody to meet you in the same way, right? To the best that they can, anyway. Yeah.
Yes, yes. And he did apologize, but it kept happening to the point where I wasn't sure if it was ever going to stop. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And you saw a lot, didn't you?
I did see a lot, and I wish I would just stop thinking about it, you know.
Well, that's something that you can do.
Yeah. I mean, I keep thinking about how it was so wonderful in many ways, and I keep thinking, did I blow it? Did I, you know, I shouldn't have asked the question,
The thinking about it is something that is unnecessary. And that's just a huge part of practice, awareness practice, is realizing that it does, that's not helpful. Going up into conditioned mind and doing reviews and postmortems and that sort of thing, that just feeds conditioning. It's not helpful. Everything that there is for us to learn in a situation will drop in as intuition, as insight, right? You'll just have a sense of something. You'll have a clarity about something, but it won't come from going over it again. And no, that's just torture.
I've spent so many hours doing that, and I guess I just need to turn my attention, like you've told me, to what I do want to feel, joy,
and things like that,
and let the insights drop in. And I guess I feel a little guilty that I'm just walking away from it. You know, there's a little bit of my mind telling me, well, how can you just forget it happened, and how can you just walk away and, you know, go joyfully skipping down the path.
That's just ego wanting to keep you stuck in suffering.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I am sad that it's kind of separated. You know, it was a separateness rather than... I am sad that it became separated rather than, you know, inclusive. It became, instead of a oneness, it became a separateness, which, you know, makes me sad.
Sure. And now we're back to what we were talking about earlier call, right? How much is sad and how much is a story? So I feel sad, and there I felt sad. That's over. Then the voices come in to tell a story. Then I feel sad again. Then that emotion passes. Then they tell the story again. Then I feel sad. That's a con job.
Okay. So quit the sad, bad run.
Yeah. Because when the sadness is there, it'll just drop in the way everything else drops in.
Okay.
And you'll feel it. And then it'll pass.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll be right here in the moment, right where you were before.
All right. And just to allow myself at some points just to be sad, so it will just let loose.
That's right. If it's an authentic emotion, it'll just be there, and it'll pass away. Yeah.
Okay.
But it won't be the result of thought patterns. Telling the story. Yeah, hearing the story again.
I get that.
Mm-hmm.
One of those types that hangs on to this stuff, I think.
Yeah.
And the other thing...
It's how ego controls people, right? Mm-hmm. And then, so there's that going on, and then it occurs to you that, you know, what I really want to do is just drop this and get into the present, because life in the present is really joyful. I mean, here you are, you're alive, right?
Mm-hmm.
And why not enjoy it? And then it says, yeah, but you should really feel guilty about that because blah, 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 blah. So it's just always got the next thing to try to grab you and draw you in.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. And the other thing I wanted to ask you about was my job. I am a reporter. And I realized something today that, you know, I feel like I have to get outside a lot, run and hike and all this stuff to be able to manage doing my job. And today I realized that I have always felt that way, not just this job. you know, that I've had that feeling for a long time, that I've had to go do some kind of physical thing in order to mentally handle my work. And I'm not sure if it depends on the work or not, or if it's just a programmed response. Because I don't feel a whole lot of joy in my work, like you said with the earlier caller, you know. And I don't always think it's the media's fault. I think, you know, people here are complaining about a nuclear power plant storing fuel next to their homes, and so I'm writing about that. But I'm not motivated. I don't feel excited about writing it. It's nothing I would pick to write about. But the job gives me the money to do the retreats and things like that. So, and I'm lucky to have it, really.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. My best encouragement is just to watch in the same way that you're watching the other aspects of your life, and just see, just see what's there, what's there, and then what is the result of a story? What's just there, and what do you get talked into?
But what about never feeling happy at the job that I am doing?
Well, first, there are a couple of things about that. One, we can be happy doing anything if we choose to be happy doing it. But that's not the same as you should stay in a job you don't like and learn to make yourself happy in it. Those are two really different things. So if it seems to you that it's always been the case that you've never been happy in a job, then I would say that might be a process to explore. If you've been happy in jobs, but you're not happy in this job, then that might be a place where you'd want to explore doing something else.
I can remember writing one article that I was thrilled to write about. I got up happy to write about it. I really enjoyed it, and it was about someone who had tremendous response to a health program that really got healthy in a big way. So it was a positive, inspiring article. And it was joyful to write. And, maybe that's a hint right there.
That could be a hint, huh?
Yeah.
All right. Well, keep watching,
Yep. This is what I'm learning now. I got the concepts before. You know, at the New Year's retreat, I was all happy about the concepts, and now I'm having the experience. That's a whole different world.
Applying it. You're applying it.
Yes. Wow.
That'll get fun too, Rita. That'll get fun too. I promise you that.
Great. Thank you, Sherry.
Okay. Take care. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Rita. And Sherry, I think we have time for one more caller here.
Oh, good.
And
hi, Sherry and Michael. Hi, Sherry and Michael.
Introduce yourself.
Who's this?
Hi, Sherry and this is Lisa from California.
Hello, Lisa. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. And I hope you and Michael are doing well, too.
We are. So, I think we are.
Great. So, I wanted to give you an update on my job search. I called earlier in the year about that. So I had a lot of resistance with it, and you said to look at that. And so I've been doing the coaching. I've been doing the coaching with that continued, and I got to a point where I really was really enjoying the job search, because what I was doing was I had weekly content and practice commitments, and they were only, they'd be 3 or 4 content goals. And, I still had the resistance, but all I would do was just look, like I had the calls every week. So I would just focus on doing the 3 or 4 achievable content goals, and then report, you know, during the call on, you know, I would do them and report on them. And then I actually was really, really, really enjoying it a lot. So, And then I got my, you know,
the process. The process got to be fun.
Yeah, but it was because of the structure of the of the coaching calls with you know, I would like go down the hole, I got my practice commitments really solid, and then I would look for, you know, I knew I just had to do those 3 goals and then report on them, you know, at the end of the week. And so anyway, I was actually really enjoying them. I think I was really practicing, like, feeling I'm not in control, and just kind of just enjoying it. And then what happened around, it was Memorial Day weekend about a month, you know, a couple weeks ago. So one of the things I did led to lunch with somebody who had a position. And during the lunch, it's somebody that I met a long time ago when I was in school, still in school. And it sounded like during the position, during the lunch, she was just going to hire me. and it was, you know, it's a job I'm very interested in. And she was said things like, she asked for references and planning, like when I could start and that kind of thing. And so that kind of disrupted my whole rhythm. That conversation, that, and then another thing, another place is kind of panning out as well, where I'm gonna get second round interviews. But what happened was I've seen this on retreats during working meditation. I haven't done that many working meditation retreats, but it's a process where I just went like an overdrive, like where it's like I started planning. Okay, that's a, you know, I know that's a key, but like a list of what I need to do to finish up my current job, you know, all the things I need to do before, you know, things I need to do when I, like with my car, so that if I don't have free time to take care of it and that kind of thing. And so I kind of was revved up into this, like, I got to do all this stuff now, and I don't even have the job or anything yet, right? So because I don't have enough for the job or anything. But I felt like it's actually disrupting my process. You know, I mean, the place I was in, yeah.
Yeah, you were doing really well with the job search, and now these doggone job offers are just going to mess with the system.
Yeah. So yeah. Do you have any guidance?
Well, it occurs to me, first of all, that you've got that handy-dandy coach, right?
Oh, yeah.
So
uh-huh.
What can happen is that your coach can help you shift gears, right? So if you now have a job, you know, you're going to get a job offer, then the coaching can just switch to, okay, now what are the steps that you need to, what are the commitments that you need to make? What do you need to accomplish? You know, chunk those down into manageable pieces so that you can do those and be successful. So the process of the coaching can continue right on. It's just the content will shift from finding a job to getting going in the job.
And, you know, I don't have the job yet. It's more, I think I left, you know, she just made these very encouraging statements, and I might not even get a job, you know, I might not, until I get a written offer, you know, I'm going to keep looking, but.
Yes.
But, yeah.
But you can still begin to shift over, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you could have the job search continue, as you say, but then start So maybe you've got two things that you're doing to continue the job search, and you've got mm-hmm. two commitments that you make or goals that you're going to accomplish that are getting you ready for the job, so that when you get the offer, it's not such a shock, mm-hmm. and you know it throws you into that panic of, all right, well, now I've got to lay out the next year of my life because I'm going to be going to work now instead of what I'm doing currently. Your mm-hmm. coach can help you. Your coach can help you sort that out. They're good at that, aren't they?
Extremely, extremely helpful. Yes, no, I agree. I just thought uh-huh. I'd just take advantage of calling in and giving yeah. you an update. And yeah.
Yeah. Good. Well, that's exciting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's exciting.
I've been practicing like my hair is on fire.
Good. Good. And it sounds like it's paying off in these mm-hmm. kind of practical ways. So that's very mm-hmm. good too, isn't it?
It's great. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay.
Right.
Well,
thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Sherry, and thank you, Michael.
Keep us posted. Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you. All right. Good night.
Good night. Mm-hmm.
Thanks for joining us, Lisa. That certainly sounded like a coaching testimonial to me, Sherry.
It did, didn't it? You know, her coach is having a proud moment right now.
Yeah.
It is good. It's so, that's, of course, why we came up with the program, right? Right. And why we've come up with the recording and listening trainers, because, you know, we need support. We do. We need support. And it's hard to get. We can't go it alone. The Buddha said, Bodhidharma and Sangha, we need people to do this with. We need that support. Yeah.
Yes.
All right.
Thank you for being in this effort, Sherry.
Yeah, I'm glad that we have your support, Michael, week after week after week after week.
It's
so
my pleasure.
Thank
privilege.
You for that.
Thank
all right.
You.
Talk to you next week then, huh? Good Lord willing.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Michael. Good night.
Good night.